The following is a Grihastha seminar given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on May 25th, 2009, in Vakos, Mauritius.
Varakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sadhana Raghana Tanvita Sudaita Savaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha. So, I've been asked to speak about Grihastha life. One could say, ideal Grihastha life, but actually Grihastha life means ideal Grihastha life. Because if it's not ideal, it is not Grihastha life, it is Grihamedita. So, how to, first of all, why to live Grihastha life instead of Grihamedita? Before we talk about how, we first must talk about why. Mostly people live Grihamedi life. So why one would want to live Grihastha life, which means following regulated principles? No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling. Rising early, offering Mangal Arti, you see. Worshipping Tulsi Devi. Why one would want to do these things when you could just, you know, get up late, throw some breakfast down your throat and rush to the office and get more sleep? See, why would you want to get up early? Actually, in the early days of ISKCON, we didn't get up early. Prabhupada introduced that later on. Devotees would go out late night on Harinam, they'd sleep late in the morning. But then Prabhupada introduced this rising early. He quoted the American philosopher Benjamin Franklin, who said, early to bed and early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. So a grihastha, does he need wealth? Of course he does. He has a wife to maintain, he has kids to educate, to clothe, to feed, to give medication. He has rent to pay, he needs money. So actually even your material necessities become more easily obtained when you become properly situated in sadhana bhakti. People think, well, I got to focus on making money, otherwise how will I make it? But that's a mistake. If you focus on Lakshmi instead of Narayan, you will sometimes have Lakshmi. But where there is no Narayan, Lakshmi is what? Shamshala. She's unsteady. He will sometimes bless those who bless where there is no Narayan. And sometimes she will not. It's like the modern day society, America, a booming economy, but now, because no Narayan. Sometimes Lakshmi will bless the non-devotees. But she is not steady. But those who are solidly fixed in serving Krishna and Narayana, Lakshmi comes to them. They don't have to worry about the material thing. They worry, how can I become more and more absorbed in Krishna consciousness? Was Bhaktivinoda Thakur worried about making money? No, he was actually very well paid by the British government. He had no anxiety for his money. His anxiety was how to save the suffering souls on this planet who were lacking Krishna consciousness. That was his only anxiety. Therefore, he would stay up late at night writing books, writing songs, writing essays about Krishna consciousness. That he is the ideal grihastha. Grihetako vanetako. Whether you're a householder or a forest dweller, sadda hari bolo, should always chant the holy name. So the ideal householder, he rises early in the morning and he chants 16 rounds before sunrise on beads. Prabhupada said chant around the beads. Clicker was not introduced during Prabhupada's time. I don't know if you are, the clickers are big here. Are clickers big in Mauritius? They're big here, no question. We never heard of clicker for japa when Prabhupada was on this planet. Prabhupada never saw such a thing. No one ever chanted on a clicker when Prabhupada was here. Somehow this became popular after Prabhupada left. If it's an emergency, all right. But it shouldn't be a regular practice. It's some emergency thing. It's like in China, if you're caught with bees, they may arrest you. That's emergency. We have many devotees in China. Actually, they're chanting on bees also. So, I have students there also in China. So, chant on the beads. That's the, you'll find that there in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says, chanting round the beads. You may say, but it's so much more convenient to chant on the clicker. You know, I can get in the car and go click, click here, click, click there. The thing is, japa is, that's called inattentive chanting. Japa is meant to be with full attention. That's why Prabhupada recommends before sunrise. You see, you go to bed early as possible in the evening. No television, no late night, this and that. Just finish up your business, take your evening prasadam, a little kirtan, you know, some little program is good, but then get that, get the dishes clean, get everything put to bed early as possible, the whole family. Light should go off as soon as possible in the house every night. And then you can rise early in the morning before the sunrise during Brahma Mahatam. It's a very powerful spiritual atmosphere. And you can dive deep, deep, deep into the nectarian ocean of Krishna's name. And then you'll be surcharged with bhakti throughout the whole day. No matter what situation you face in your business, or your job, or in school, no matter what situation you face, you'll be able to see it in relationship with Krishna. You understand? Yamam pashati sarvatra sarvancha mai pashati tasyaham na pranashyami satchamena pranashyati. Krishna says, do you know that verse? Chapter 6, text number 30. The one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So how do you develop that consciousness? Early morning japa will put you in that state of consciousness. Not japa in the middle of this, japa in the middle of that. Where it feels like an inconvenience, actually, to have to get it done. In terms of all of our, you know, busy activities during the day. So, if you will chant your rounds early in the morning, Then I, if you do that one thing, you'll become an ideal grihastha. By the power of a holy name, you'll become ideal grihastha. Just by early morning chanting. Because you'll have a taste for the name. Grihasthas oftentimes become sidetracked by sense gratification. It's like we say no illicit sex, that means only for procreation. Many householders can't maintain that. Why? Because they're not getting the taste from the name. But once you get a taste from the name, what does Bhagavatam say? Yan maitanadi grihamedi sukham tu cham. Grihamedi. Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham. Bhagavatam very clearly says sex is considered the number one pleasure for the materialistic household. We consider it numero uno, number one pleasure. Maitunadi. Sex, number one. But Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham. But what does Bhagavatam say? He tucham. It is indeed insignificant. For one who is actually tasting the sweet pleasure of Krishna's name, which is Krishna himself, if Krishna walked in the door right now, would you be enlivened to see Krishna walking through the door? To actually see the Supreme Personality of God with your very eyes? Wouldn't you become inspired and enlivened? Oh, Krishna is here. Well, he comes every time you chant your name, his name. We just think, oh yeah, Hare Krishna. We don't focus on the name because we forget that this is Krishna himself. So by diving deep into the nectar of the names, one will experience a very, very sublime taste. And then one can become fixed in a fixed up grihastha, very fixed up. There'll be no temptation to illicit sex, even though you have the most beautiful wife. You see? There'll be no temptation to illicit sex. I remember when I was a young brahmachari, one householder couple in Miami, they told me, I never forget this, it's amazing. They said, you know, the husband told me, he said, you know, of course in ISKCON, you know, before you, it's in the Vedic culture, before having sex, it was Garbhadhan Sanskara. It was a public ceremony where the Brahmins were invited. But now we're going to try to have a child for the first time. We've had no sex. We've been perfectly celibate, husband and wife. And now we're going to have sex. We're having a child. So we'll have a big festival to commemorate. And now we're going to have sex. It's called Garbhadhan Sanskara. The Brahmins are brought in. Charity is given. The prasad distribution. All to purify that act of sex. And it's called Garbhadhan Sanskara. Papa didn't ask us to go that far, but he did ask us to do a, you know, modernized version, which is chant 50 rounds of japa. And Papa does actually mention in his books, Papa said before the husband and wife try to have a child, they should take permission from their spiritual master to do that. So this is actually the mood, you see. But sex is not for recreation. Sex is for procreation. So that's a good buzzword. For procreation, not for recreation. That is grihastha. So anyway, this householder couple, the husband told me, he said that last night, my wife and I, we chanted 50 rounds. We were going to try to have a child. But after finishing those 50 rounds, we felt so spiritually elevated, flying high on that the mantra. And we said, why should we come down to the gross platform? Well, we'll do it. We'll wait another month. This is Krishna consciousness. They've done all the austerity, so now we can have sex for producing a child. But they felt so elevated by that 50 rounds. They said, forget it, we don't want to come down. We feel like we're in the spiritual world right now after those 50 rounds of japa. We don't want to come down to the gross plane. of male and female. Let's stay up here on the spiritual plane. Maybe next month we'll do it. Try to have a child a month from now. So this is Krishna consciousness. So the householder, he has to dive deeply into japa. That's very important. See, in the temple it's easy because you have Mangalarti and there's the japa period. You have Prabhupada there. It's so easy in the temple to chant good mantras. But at home, if you wait till the sun after sunrise, it's so difficult to chant good mantras. But if you'll do it in the early morning before the sun comes up, it's just like the temple. That Brahma Muhurta is just like the temple atmosphere in the early morning. Everybody else, all your neighbors are asleep. The streets are quiet. The phone doesn't ring. Nobody rings your doorbell. You see, it's a great time. The kids can get up too and join in. The whole family can get up and observe the Brahma Muhurta, you see. A little Mangalarti. Engage the children in this way, you see. The child can enjoy anything. They're completely open to anything. Let them experience a nice morning program every day. And you'll be amazed at how they become great devotees in a very short time. If they have that regular contact by hearing the holy names, engaging along with their parents in devotional activities like bowing down, offering the arti, all of these activities, a child can enjoy anything. So you absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness. Engage your child doing it along with you. And you go to the temple, sit your child in your lap so he doesn't run around. He sits and hears the Bhagavatam also in the Bhagavad Gita lecture. Vishnupriya Mataji is most expert. She trained my disciple, Abhaicharam, how to train his little baby boy, Kirtan. Kirtan was engaged in every devotional activity. When the father would be cutting vegetables for the Sunday feast, he would give a dull knife and a little cutting board and some vegetables. The child also cut. Of course, he wasn't able to cut very well when he was a little baby. But like a little child, a little girl may have a toy stove, you know, pretending like she's cooking. So in the beginning, he was just pretending like he was cutting vegetables. But it was a fun for him. Pita and Mata, they are doing, and I am also doing, you see. The family, they're all cutting vegetables together, you see. And then, of course, as he grows older, he can actually cut the vegetables. But it was so amazing, at the age of 3, maybe you can tell this story better than me. You can fill in the missing details. At the age of 3, his father, Abhaicharan Das, and I, and the boy, we went to Houston, which is about 150 miles away from Austin, for a home program. And now Abhaicharan, he's taking, serving his guru. He was the only disciple there, so he was making sure everything was proper for my giving a lecture and everything. So the little boy was a little neglected. So normally he's getting all of the father's attention, but now the attention is coming to the spiritual master. And this little boy is feeling a little neglected. So somehow or other, somehow he was on the phone with Mataji. And Mataji said, "How's it going?" And what did he say?
He quoted the verse.
He said, "Matvisparsha shtukon teya." No, what was it?
He quoted that verse.
Mamupetya punarjanma dukalayam shashvatam. A 3-year-old boy, she said, "How are you doing?" And he quotes a Bhagavad Gita verse to explain how he was doing, being neglected. Dukalayam shashvatam. And then?
And I asked him, "So what are you going to do now? You are saying it's true. So what are you going to do?" Then he said, "Matrasparshastukantaya."
What are you going to do now that it's a miserable situation, you're being neglected, it's in some stranger's home and you were sitting there feeling all alone? He said, "3-year-old boy, Now, I've seen in some temples, you know, they have a Bhagavad Gita class for the little kids, you know. They practice the whole year, and they get up at Janmashtami, and they recite the verses, and everybody applauds them. But can they quote those verses in context for preaching philosophy? No. It's just like a parrot repetition. But this little boy, he had, 3 years old, he had comprehended the meaning. He had never been gone to a memorization class. Just by hearing the lectures, he memorized the verses. Little children have brains that can learn much better and much faster than we do. So don't cheat your children by letting them run wild during the lectures. Don't cheat them by letting them play with each other and make faces at each other, you know, during the lectures. I don't know what they do here. At some temples, it's just like the romper room. The kids are running here and there during the lecture, you see. Engage your children when there's a lecture going on. If you have to, sit them in your lap. You hear and you engage him in here. Because if the children will hear, you know, Prahlad Maharaj, he heard in the womb. How young of a baby was he? He was in the womb. He heard the Bhagavatam and he came out, appeared a devotee. Shukadev Goswami, the same thing. Just by hearing within the womb. So the most important thing is for your kids is engage them in hearing about Krishna from senior devotees and from yourself also, as much as possible. You don't have to talk to them like little babies. You can speak high-level philosophy and they will absorb it. You can actually preach to them just like they were an adult from the youngest possible age. And they will grasp it in due course. You'll be amazed. They'll be amazed. You preach to them just pure, full-on, full philosophy. You'll be enlivened and they will actually understand. They can comprehend and learn faster than any other age in the life. A small child can learn faster and quicker than anyone else. They master a language just by hearing. If we try to master a foreign language, it will take years and still we'll be struggling with it. But they, with no formal training, just by hearing it, they can pick up a whole language or two. If you have two languages, they can pick up two languages in your house if you have two languages. Without any formal training, just by hearing it. So they have the children have a very, very powerful ability to learn by hearing at that young age. Don't cheat them. Let them hear, let engage them in kirtan, engage them in hearing from Prabhupada's books. In this way, you see, this is grihastha life. Grihastha means you make your children fear devotees. That is grihastha life. Make them fear devotees. You'll be happy, your children will be happy. Just imagine if your child becomes a great saintly devotee of the Lord, how blessed you will be. You see, even if your devotional service is struggling, if your child becomes very advanced, you will go back to God and it's by the potency of your child. You see. So do everything you can. Even if you feel you're lacking in your spiritual life, do everything that child will not be lacking in any way in his spiritual life. Those of us who didn't grow up in devotee homes, you see, we have some poor training that makes it harder for us. But don't give your child that deficiency. You give your child the very best day training from the very day he comes out of his womb. Instead of giving him mundane toys like Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse, and Daffy Duck and all those crazy characters, Walt Disney toys, give them Krishna conscious toys. Krishna doll. Radharani doll. Well, Prabhupada's toy was Ratha Yatra chariot. Little Ratha Yatra cart. Give them Krishna conscious toys. They'll love them. You see? Give them nice Krishna conscious things. Krishna conscious coloring books. Give them everything Krishna conscious. Prabhupada was very proud of them. When he joined, there was one little boy who became also a disciple. At a very young age, he was initiated as Dvarkadish Das. Maybe you've heard about Dvarkadish Das. Of course, he's an adult now. But Prabhupada used to affectionately call him Mr. DDD, Dvarka Dish Das. Baba used to talk about Dvarka Dish Das, Mr. DDD, he called him. His father, who was not a devotee, he came to visit him. He brought him some mundane toys. And what did Mr. DDD say? He said, "It is my one." He didn't want them. He wouldn't accept mundane toys from his materialistic father. He just wanted Krishna consciousness. So give your children the best education. That is your duty. As mother and father, it is your duty to see that those children do not take birth again in this material world. That is your great responsibility. If you take that responsibility very seriously, you will go back to Godhead also. Why? Because the more you give Krishna, the more you get Krishna. That's one of the secrets. The preachers know. And that's why preachers preach as much as they possibly can, because they taste it. They know the more you give Krishna, the more you get Krishna. So you, as training a child, you have the greatest opportunity to give Krishna. You have a captive audience until they grow up, you see. When they're teenagers, it's too late. Train them up when they're young and they'll do whatever you tell them to do. And they'll like it. Take full advantage when they're small to engage them 100% in Krishna consciousness activities. And they'll become addicted to it. They'll fall in love with it and they'll never give it up. It's your duty as parents to do that. So you be ideal in your own practice and you make your children ideal. This is Krishna conscious household. I've seen in ISKCON, it's actually shocking. I don't know right here, but this may be different in Russia. In America, in ISKCON, so many divorces. You see devotees falling down, having illicit sex with other men's wives. It's disgusting. Marriage is breaking all the time. It's just a horrible thing. I don't know why the devotees haven't learned, but it's Krishna consciousness yet. But when I joined this movement, you see, and when I took a wife, actually my godbrother arranged, my GBC man, I had an arranged marriage, like the traditional Indian thing, arranged marriage. So anyway, when I found myself as a married devotee, I knew that I could never divorce. Why? Because my parents never even heard them fight with each other. I never heard one argument. I never heard them even get angry at each other. The whole time I lived with them, from the age of, you know, 1 month up to when I left the house, maybe I went to college, maybe age 18 or something. For about 18 years, I lived with them constantly, and I never heard them fight with each other for 18 years. Can you imagine? What, not, I mean, no question, divorce, I mean, there wasn't even a fight. So I knew, because I'd been, you know, I accepted that this was better than Christianity. Krishna consciousness was better than Christianity. That's why I joined this movement. It was better than the Christian church that I attended. So I knew that if I couldn't make my marriage work, that I'd be a hypocrite. It shows that Krishna consciousness is inferior to Christianity. I knew I had to make my marriage work no matter what. Otherwise I would lose face. I would be shamed. I would be put to shame that I had taken this Krishna consciousness and it was inferior to the Christianity of my upbringing. You see. You can't just say it's superior because Krishna says it's superior. You have to prove it by your actions also. You understand? We say this is the best. Everybody says they are the best. If you want to prove it's really the best, then prove it by your actions. That is Krishna consciousness. Yad yadacharati shreshtas tattare vetarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokastadnanamartate. So I knew I had to prove it by my actions. So a house sutra, he has to, no, I have, there's no question, this is Vedic culture. There's no question of divorce. Are there any divorces here of devotees in Mauritius?
Starting.
Some?
Starting.
Huh?
Starting.
Starting. Stop it right now. Stop it. Anybody is thinking about getting a divorce, send me an email. SDA@backtohome.com. And Mataji and I will discuss your situation. And we'll be your marriage counselors to help you hold your marriage together. No more divorces in this country. If my instruction has any potency, my instruction is don't anyone of the devotees here, none of the devotees here should have completely against what Prabhupada wants. So, we've covered a lot of points so far. Did I miss anything?
I don't.
Oh, yeah. I gave this the other day, this point, but maybe not all of you heard it. There was one brahmachari who was thinking, oh, you know, if I had a nice female companion, then I could really be happy. So I'll become grihastha. You see, I have a nice female companion. But then, you know, a few fights later, after he got married, you know, what is this married life? Miserable. So he wrote Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I want to be a sannyasi. You think Prabhupada was pleased with him? No. He was whimsical, you see. Now I'm unhappy as a brahmachari, let me get married. Now I'm married after a few days, now I want to be a sannyasi. This is nonsense. They say there's you ever seen the cows, they stick their head in the other through the fence, they eat the grass on the other side, you see? That's called cow consciousness. The grass is greener on the other side of the fence. So Prabhupada chastised him. He said, your unhappiness is not due to your external circumstances, brahmachari, grihastha, etc. Your anxiety is due to your own lack of Krishna consciousness. So if you're thinking about divorce, well, I'm not happy with this partner. Your unhappiness is not because of that relationship with that woman or that man. Your unhappiness is due to your lack of Krishna consciousness. That's it. That's it. That's the only reason you're in anxiety. So all you have to do is increase your Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. You may say that it's such stormy weather, we have so many arguments and this and that, it's just intolerable. But what does a pilot do when he hits stormy weather? Does he keep going through it? No, he elevates the airplane to a higher elevation and goes above the storm. So if in your house or life you're having klesha, you know, if your house becomes klesha desha, becomes like the famous fight between Cassius Clay and I forget who it was. It becomes like a boxing ring. Your house is, instead of an ashram, it's like a boxing ring. Then you just have to elevate it. You have to elevate. Say we have to elevate ourselves to a higher level. We have to get beyond this by coming to Krishna consciousness. So the husband and wife should both agree to this principle that we have to make this marriage work to please our spiritual master, our spiritual masters, and Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. Somehow or other, we must make this marriage work. This is our duty. Marriage is such that even Prabhupada said that if the household life is Krishna conscious, there's no need to take sannyas. Of course, vanaprastha, once you become a renounced householder, vanaprastha, eventually. Not the whole life just thinking about having more and more children and, you know, bigger and bigger house, not like that. There should be a point when you think more about preaching, doing more preaching, more temple service, going on pilgrimages, you know, try to retire into full-time devotional activities. besides livelihood. But Prabhupada said that sannyasa is actually not necessary if the household is Krishna conscious. He also said that his grihasthas, he referring to his grihasthas, were full on preachers. He said they are paramahamsa. They're not anything less than the sannyasis. And when Prabhupada introduced Krishna consciousness to the UK, how did he do it? With sannyasis? Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he sent sannyasi to London. Was he successful? Well, he did get a few pictures taken with some lords and ladies. That was about it. Huge amount of rupees were being sent from India to London to maintain this disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. He was unsuccessful. Bhakti Siddhanta had to call him back to India. He was a failure in introducing Krishna consciousness to the UK. And then Prabhupada sent three householder couples to the UK. Very shortly there was a big article in the London newspaper, Hare Krishna Startles London. They made a big, big impact on those three householder couples. Shama Sundar weaseled his way in to meet with George Harrison. Very cunningly, very intelligently, he weaseled his way in to make, and George immediately hit it off, and they became very close friends, Shama Sundar and George Harrison. And with George's help, it just went like anything. It expanded like anything. So, don't think that, you know, I can't be a powerful preacher because I'm a married woman. No. You can be a most powerful preacher. Just become pure in your Krishna consciousness. To the extent that you're pure in your practice of strictly following the rules and regulations and always remembering Krishna. To that extent, Krishna will empower you. He will give you shakti for pushing forward this movement. We want to revolutionize this entire island and make Mauritius the first Krishna-conscious country. So ideal country we want to make this, that all the world leaders will come to Mauritius to study how you live on this island. We want to make this the first ideal country on this planet now, in this Kali Yuga. That's our goal here for our movement in Mauritius. You work together cooperatively, each one of you developing your pure bhakti and preaching shakti, so that you can make this whole island Krishna conscious. This is our request. So we need ideal grihasthas and we need ideal brahmacharis. It's good for him to hear all this because, and he can preach nicely to the grihasthas also by hearing these things. So I can ask if there's any questions now.
Yes. Sometimes among devotees we do have different opinions.
Different opinion?
Yes.
Sometimes we actually agree with each other. That's probably a better way to say it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it does cause a clash. So how we go about things like that?
When there's disagreement?
Yes.
Well, Prabhupada has already answered this question in his Bhagavatam purport. He says sometimes there are differences of opinion between the devotees on how to serve Krishna. Because they're all agreeing that we should serve Krishna, therefore their difference of opinion is spiritual. Well, just think about it. I'm thinking we should serve Krishna in this way. You were thinking we should serve Krishna in that way. Is that a major conflict? No. Because we both agree to serve Krishna. That disagreement on how we should serve Krishna, that's a detail. The basic principle is we agree to serve Krishna. So we should maintain our love for each other, that I want to serve Krishna, you want to serve Krishna, we're of one spirit. even though the details we may vary, that's a minor thing. The major point is we all agree to serve Krishna, we all agree to serve Srila Prabhupada. You see? That's what we have to see. If you always remember that, and always keep your love and your respect for all the devotees, even if on the details you may differ, then the details, those details will not stand in the way of a wonderful cooperative movement. The details should be discussed, but with love, not with anger. There can be open discussion. There's difference of opinion, and you bring your opinion, but hear the other's opinion also. You can try to convince him of your opinion, and let him try to convince you of his opinion. Maybe you're wrong. Have you ever been wrong before? Yeah, that's good, an honest Brahman. So if I've been wrong before, I could be wrong now too. So if you think I'm wrong, you tell me why you think I'm wrong, and I'll hear you openly. Yeah, but I may think that you're wrong, and you should hear openly from me why I think that you're wrong. So let's both openly hear each other. I guarantee if you do that, you will come to a point where you can see eye to eye with each other. Where you come to a point of agreement. That's the method. Be willing to hear. The trouble is, we're too eager to speak and not eager enough to hear. How many ears did God give you? Two. And how many mouths? One. So you must be, God, this tells us something. You should be twice as eager to hear as you are to speak. Speaking is okay, but you should be twice as interested to hear as you are to speak. Those who are very expert in hearing, they become highly qualified speakers. Those who can't hear very well, they can never speak very well. They never become qualified preachers. Those who can't hear submissively, who can't listen to others revealing their hearts openly, they never become good preachers because they were not good hearers. You can never become a good preacher unless you become a first-class hearer. Prabhupada said that was his secret. He said others went away. You know the story of Vrindavan? Everyone know that story of Prabhupada's? But Prabhupada, you know, he was a grihastha businessman in Allahabad, Prayag Pharmacy. But he had accepted Bhaktisiddhanta. He had taken shelter. Even though he didn't have diksha, he had taken shelter in his heart. The very first meeting, he didn't wait for 6 months in a formal recommendation, shelter exam. Prabhupada took shelter immediately. As soon as he heard Guru Maharaj tell him that you spread this to English to the English-speaking world and his objections were defeated, he immediately took shelter of Bhaktisiddhanta as his spiritual master. So, this was many years later, almost 11 years later, he got the chance to go. He had had to relocate because of his business to another side of India. He wasn't getting any association with Guru Maharaj. But now he had a chance because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was doing the Vrindavan Parikrama. So, in Vrindavan they have a different kind of nightlife than we have here in the Western countries. Of course, you call this a Western country? Not really. In the Western countries, nightlife means prostitution, cinema, liquor, meat, all these things. That's called nightlife. But in Vrindavan, nightlife means darshan. You see? Go over this temple for darshan, that temple for darshan. It's like in our Krishna Balaram Mandir, so many people come in the evening for darshan, especially during Kartik. You can hardly get in the door, it's so crowded, you see. So, anyway, he went for the parikrama, the Navan parikrama. So it's the evening time, and that's when people like to go to darshan. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he's giving the evening pravachan also. So, how many people would go? Only a very few numbers. Because Bhaktisiddhanta, he would speak in very erudite English. You see. The materialistic demigod cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat who was forever inviting fallen. In this way he would speak, you see. Even for a native English speaker, you know, what is he talking about? Where's my unabridged dictionary? So, and these are mostly Bengali village boys. So they're all going for darshan. No one's for the temple. No one is staying. Only two or three sannyasis are sitting there. So they hear the lecture. But there was one other person. That was that pharmaceutical businessman from Allahabad. Abhay Chandray. He would sit in here. He said, I would understand, I would not understand. But I would go on listening. I would go on hearing. Now just like in ISKCON, when you want to get Diksha, you see. For Diksha, you get recommended by the temple authority to the guru. Just like I got a recommendation, I gave initiation yesterday to Archana City Devi Dasi. I had recommendation from the local authority on that basis. So, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, he got recommendation from the devotees who were preaching there in Allahabad that we would like to recommend this Abhay Chandray. What did Bhakti Siddhanta say? Yes, I know him. He hears very nicely. He was noticing. He said, everyone else goes away, but this one stays, you see. So Prabhupada said, because I heard nicely, therefore I can speak very nicely. So how many of you would like to be powerful preachers of Krishna consciousness? Let's raise your hand if you'd like to be a powerful preacher. You can do great things for Lord Chaitanya's movement. Some of you aren't raising your hands. What's wrong? Maybe they don't speak English. But therefore, if you want it, then you learn how to become very, very, very good hearer, you see. You'll be very, very good listener. And by that good listening, you'll become a very powerful preacher. I guarantee you, it works. Prabhupada said it works. It does work. That's a simple formula how you can become a great preacher. Just become a very first-class hearer. Then you'll become a first-class preacher. Guaranteed. I don't care if you're a man, a woman, an old person, a little child. This applies to everyone in this room. Everybody in our whole movement, this applies to them. Become a good hearer, you'll become a powerful, powerful preacher. That's okay. So anyway, any other questions? No. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, should I ask a personal question or can I generalize it?
Well, just whatever you think is best.
But there's always a tendency within a couple that one is, it's just a relative term, that one is more spiritually inclined, the other one is a bit kind of materially inclined. So there's always a kind of...
In a marriage?
Within the marriage, yeah.
Yeah, so the one who is more spiritually inclined should take the leading role. Even if it's a woman. If a woman is more spiritually inclined, she should become the guru of her husband. You see, her siksha guru. And train him how to be a devotee. Whoever is more spiritually inclined, they should be the siksha guru. They should take the leading role in that marriage. Doesn't matter if it's a man or the woman. Who is more spiritually inclined, they should take the leading role.
And what about the conflicts, Maharaj? Both the ones have conflicts.
No, he wants to say what happens if it's the other way around. If the materialistic person is more influential on the spiritual.
What is
he saying? He says what happens if the person who is more materialistic, he is leading.
He's doing what?
He is take the authoritative. It's a means policy where spiritual comes in.
Well, ignorance can be covered only temporarily. I mean, knowledge can only be temporarily covered. Knowledge always wins out over ignorance. That's all. In due course of time. We may think that ignorance rules, but light is more powerful than darkness. I'll give you proof. Go into a dark room and light a candle, and you'll see that light goes all over the room. Take a can that has darkness in it, go out in the bright sun and take the lid off. That darkness won't have any impact. It'll be destroyed in an instant. So, sometimes the truth can be temporarily covered by ignorance, that's the thing. You have to be patient. and to be patient. If one spouse is very eager and the other is really against it, you got to be very, very patient. I have a student in North America. He's very eager to get initiated, but his wife is like against it. So he's slowing down his own progress, just so his wife doesn't become disturbed. And he's pulling her along. Now she's coming. They both become initiated now. He's very compassionate and very tolerant. He doesn't heavy her out. He's very patient, very tolerant, and just giving love, giving mercy, giving mercy, giving mercy. And gradually she's being transformed. So if one spouse is eager for Krishna consciousness, the other is against it, be very patient and be very, very kind. That's the answer. And that other person will gradually be, they say, love conquers all. So how long you can stand up against knowledge and love? Sooner or later, your heart will melt. If someone keeps giving you more love, more love, more love, in spite of your being negative, they keep giving you love, eventually your heart will melt. But whoever is more Krishna conscious, they will have more power than the one who is not Krishna conscious. That's the fact. But they have to be patient. You can't expect that immediately somebody will become Krishna conscious. Does that answer your question? Sort of? Or definitely?
It's more of this saying that it's easy for the wife to follow the husband, but the husband, it's more conflict is between the husband because husband has a false ego.
Oh, wife don't have false ego? Wait a minute here. Wives don't have false egos?
They may have it, but it's easier. They may have it, but it's generally there.
Well, the female psychology, the way she said it, we laughed, but actually her point is valid. Because the fact is, there's a natural feminine psychology to take shelter of a man, and there's a natural male psychology to give protection to a woman. It's a natural psychology built into the human race for the success of the human race. A woman's, in a weaker condition physically. The husband's more powerful physically. So there is a natural tendency for the husband to show his strength, and so that's why if it's more difficult situation if the wife is more Krishna conscious than the husband. It's a very difficult, but I have some of my students who are in that situation, some lady devotees. They have a husband who's completely against Krishna consciousness. And it's a real challenge. I have one disciple in Delhi. She's in that position. She's very, very strong and very determined and very, very patient. She'll want to go to Mayapur, and the husband will say, and get very angry. No, you can't go to Mayapur. You can't go to Jagannathpur. You just stay here in the house. She has to put down her foot sometimes. No, I'm going to go. And just let him get angry and get over it. Sometimes she has to do that with him, her husband. She has to take care of her spiritual life. The husband is dead set against it sometimes. But gradually, slowly, I'm sure he'll become Krishna conscious because his wife is a very pure-hearted devotee, very pure soul. Very pure soul. So she will win out in the end, I'm sure. The husband doesn't realize how fortunate he is. He's being blessed by the association of a great saintly devotee of the world. So, any other questions?
Yeah.
So, I just want to ask a small question. It's between a couple and married for years, for 4 or 5 years. Couple of devotees, and after a few years, when they go to work, they've been attracted by somebody else. Men, both. It can be a question. Can be both for both of them. Woman.
What's he saying?
He's saying that a couple got married for 4 or 5 years, and then man and the woman became attracted to someone else, both or maybe one, then what?
How'd that attraction happen?
I mean, working together or anything.
Working together.
You know, wife was in the workplace? Was the wife in the workplace?
It can be for both. I mean, it can be for...
I don't know, is there a specific case? You're referring to a specific case?
I've saw two or three cases.
He saw two of those cases.
Two cases.
So, and wife or the man have been affair with the other person.
See, this is why in the Vedic culture the women were not in the workplace.
But what if the man gets attracted?
Huh?
What about the man? The man gets attracted and has affair with another woman.
That's my point.
Okay.
It's exactly my point. In the Vedic culture, the women were not in the workplace. So when you go to work, it's men only. There's no women to get attracted to unless you were gay. That could be a problem. See, the Vedic culture, as soon as you have mixed, as soon as the sexes are mixing in the workplace, then these problems happen. That's why, even when I was a kid growing up in America, the women all stayed at home. And the men went to work. The women stayed at home with the kids. Now they think we're so advanced. Husband and wife are both working, the kids have to go to daycare. Some person is not, doesn't really love them like the parents do. That's why, you know, that's why it's better the women stay at home. And they don't, there are no women in the workplace. And the men, there's no women to get attracted to at work. You see, and there's no women in the workplace to get attracted to men.
But what nowadays when the women are working?
But what to do now? Well, and the best thing is start a business and you engage your wife as your business partner. The two of you do a business together. You see? That's one solution. Be a businessman and engage your wife. She could be your best assistant in running the business. You see, I saw that my godbrother, he opened up an art studio and his wife was the accountant. She took care of the books. You see, they were a very good team. Husband and wife, business team. That's ideal. But if you have a situation where you have to go associate with other women all day long, and you spend more time with other women than you do your own wife, it's a shame, this modern society. I'm sitting in some cubicle, there's a pretty young girl right next to me, 8 hours a day. How much time do you spend with your wife? This pretty young girl, you're with her all day long. It's ridiculous. It's a shame that the culture is like this. So what do? How do you protect yourself? You have to be Krishna conscious. Put a picture of Krishna there on your desk. Put a picture of Prabhupada on your desk. See, instead of thinking about that pretty girl over there, you can think about Krishna and Prabhupada. You see what I'm saying? You have to be Krishna conscious. That will protect you. And you have to remember, I recommend that you meditate very deeply on the instruction given by Jamunacharya. He was formerly a real playboy, you know, he was a king. He had so many girlfriends. You know, when the king gets married, all the maidservants come along with the queen. He gets to have sex with all the maidservants too. The real playboy's heaven in the old days, being a king, you see. So he became a complete sadhu, a pure devotee of Krishna. He gave up that sinful life as king. And he wrote a beautiful poetry. And in that poetry he sang like this. Yadavadi mama cheta Krishna padara vinde Nava nava rasa damanum yataram tumasit Yadavadi bhatta nari sangame smaryamane Bhavati mukushushtu nishtivanamcha. You know the translation? Ever since I've been engaged in the service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, tasting what? Nava nava rasa. Newer and newer nectar. Newer and newer taste in that seva. You see. Whenever the thought of having sex with a girl comes to my brain, My lips curl with this taste and I spit at them. That mood you have to have when you go to the office. If I see that pretty young girl over there working in the cubicle next to me and I think of having sex with that girl, I immediately go, You have to be strict with your mind like that. You have to have a very chaste mind. Don't let your mind start thinking, what if? Don't think that way. You shouldn't be alone with any woman except your wife. Never be alone. Don't say, let's have lunch together. No. Let's have lunch together. No. No being alone with any woman except your own wife. Vedic culture says you can't even be alone with your own daughter. That's how strict the Vedic culture is. I remember one householder that I know, he said, that's ridiculous. You can't be alone with your daughter, but then one godbrother, he fell down and had sex with his daughter. One of my godbrothers fell down and he had sex with his own daughter, can you imagine? So that injunction is very important. You should never be alone with any woman except for your wife. Never. You should practice brahmachari principles. Except for your business, what do you need to do for your work? You should be practicing no talking, with the opposite, especially the opposite sex. No talking, aloof from the opposite sex. I don't care if they think you're... They can think whatever they want. Oh, he's proud, he's puffed up, he's haughty. Let them think whatever they want. You keep your purity, or whoever it is you're asking about. I'm saying not just to you only, but all of us, you see. But to keep our purity. Otherwise, how would you like a dog's body? Not you, I'm for all of us. How would we like to have a dog's body in our next life? You ready? How about a nice, beautiful female dog? Roof, roof, roof. Are you ready? I bring you a... For sex enjoyment, I bring you a female dog. Will you be excited? Well, you will be in your next birth. If you get too eager to associate with that pretty young girl in the cubicle next door, you're getting ready for a dog's body in your next birth. So these are very sober things. It's no joking business. You may say, oh, come on, it's not possible. No. Even after the time of death, you know that story of Akbar? You know the story of Akbar, yeah. Akbar had a prime minister. I don't know who he was.
Birbal. Bir?
My hearing is so bad.
Bir. B-I-R-B-A-L.
Birbal? Yeah, his prime minister, Birbal, said, Your Majesty... This sex desire is so powerful that even at the point of death, one cannot give up the thought of sex enjoyment. He said, no, it's not possible. He said, you just wait, Your Majesty, I will show you. So one day there was a man on his deathbed. So Birbal said, Your Majesty, come now, come and bring your beautiful young daughter along with you. So they walked into the room. Here's the king. Here's the emperor. Everyone knows. Everyone worships the emperor. He's a great emperor. The emperor walked in and the daughter... And where did the dying man, where did his eyes go? Immediately went to the young daughter, not to the emperor. So the emperor Akbar, Birbal convinced him. Yeah. So this sex desire is so powerful. Even if on one's deathbed, one will think, oh, this nurse looks really good. That's how strong it is. So you got to train yourself now not to contemplate having sex with these beautiful girls. You see. Never see them as sex objects. That's why every woman is Mataji. Every woman is mother in Vedic culture, except for one's wife. And by the way, you know what Prabhupada said the wife is called? I don't think any householder is doing this in our whole movement. In Los Angeles, which is the house, big householder community at that time, Prabhupada said the wife was addressed as Devi. And the husband is addressed as Lord. Of course, Prabhu and Lord, same thing. Not by the name. Prabhupada gave the example of Lord Shiva talking to Parvati. He didn't say Parvati, he said, my dear Devi. Vishnu Aradhanam Devi. He didn't say Vishnu Aradhanam Parvati. He said, he addressed her as Devi. That is Vedic culture. I remember my sannyasi godbrother, he met one very pious Hindu lady one time in the U.S. He said, Manaji, who is your husband? Do you know what she said? She paused for a minute and she said, I have never spoken my husband's name. I'm not saying we have to institute that in ISKCON. I'm just making a point. She was so chaste in not uttering her husband's name, she wouldn't even tell the sannyasi what her husband's name was. It's keeping some formality in that relationship. If you're too intimate and not formal enough, familiarity breeds contempt. You have to always keep that formality. Along with the intimacy, there has to be the formality of great respect. This is a great soul. Krishna has blessed me with the association of a great soul, a great transcendentalist. Somehow or other, I've been blessed by the association of this person. I must always be respectful of this person. So Prabhupada taught us to be very respectful to our wives by calling them Devi instead of calling them by their name. It's like in the military, you don't call the officer by his name, you say, yes, sir. So it's respect. Prabhupada only said it once, and practically no one does it, but I've tried to practice that. I think I'm the only one. Maybe there's a few other devotees that do that. But that's what Prabhupada said. You can hear it right there on the Vedabase. He said in Los Angeles lecture, talking about Lord Shiva and his wife. He called her Devi, not by the environment. So any other questions?
No. How could television be destructive to one's spiritual life?
Or what is TV.
TV. Television.
Yes, they call it the one-eyed guru. I'll give you an example. I have one of my students, I won't say where, but they, instead of engaging the child in devotional activities, they thought, well, the easy way is just sit him down in front of the TV and watching the cartoon. And we don't have to worry about engaging him. And we can just do whatever we want. The kids, it's a babysitter. Let him watch the cartoon. So this little child, he's completely addicted to cartoons. He sits on the couch and watches for hours the nonsense cartoons on the television. When I visited that family's home, I made a big mistake. You know what I did? I sat down on the couch where the child would watch the cartoons. I sat in his cartoon watching spot. And he became very, very upset and started crying because I was sitting on the couch where he would watch the cartoons from. So you can imagine how the child's mind had been. He was completely destroyed in his devotional mood by these cartoons. So the best solution is get rid of it. Or have a very strict policy. What you do is you fix the TV so you can only watch Krishna conscious videos on it and nothing else. It's either Krishna conscious videos only or get rid of the damn thing. One of the two. They say, but I want to watch the news. Well, you know, pick it up on CNN or something. But you need a little news every now and then to know what's going on in the world. But don't make a habit of turning on the television set and watching. And the television set is very addictive. I know I was the first generation that was exposed to TV. I was born in 47, and 49 or somewhere around then, they introduced television on North America. I still remember peering over the rail of my crib at the television. It's a very addictive thing. Even now, I have to, as a TV, I have to be very careful because I have a former addiction. It's like, you know, former TV addict. I know how dangerous it is. It just sucks your consciousness away. Television is very, very dangerous. Krishna conscious television is good. But how much programming, Krishna conscious programming, is there? If you get in the habit of watching TV in your house and give the kids the access, of course, if they're trained up properly, they won't be interested. This boy Kirtan, he went to some house and the children, what was it?
And they told him to watch this television while they are doing their work. Okay, that obedient child, he sat down there and then he got up and he says, "It's not right, so is there any service I can do?"
Yeah. So I advise getting, unless you can have a very strict policy, only Krishna conscious videos, get it out of the house.
That was never Krishna conscious. Huh? What they put him was Krishna conscious, but he was still not interested in that.
But it was the Hindu
stuff. Movie, yes.
Hindu. See, these Hindi movies, I mean, they're okay in one sense, but they're not very... I find them to be a disturbance, to be honest. I find them disturbing. Because they're not pure Shastra. There's all this Bollywood concoctions thrown into it. I don't think they're really good. I don't recommend, you know, letting your kids watch Bollywood, you know, Bollywoodized Krishna Leela. I don't recommend it. I really don't. It's better to sit and read Shastra. Let them get the pure thing. You sit as a family and read from these books. Let the children come attached to hearing from the scriptures. That's what they need, not the stupid television. You see? Television is the enemy, actually, the human consciousness, the way it's being used. Anything else? Yeah.
I mean, as regards to television, I mean, as you said, I was also living an addiction to television.
What's his name?
Addiction.
Addiction.
He was also addicted. He was also addicted to television.
Yeah. It's very disgusting thing.
So, what I did was, you know, in your house, normally the television, one of the partner can be watching the television. So you pass by and you get stuck.
So it's just like a magnet.
So what I did was I turned the television the other way so that when I pass, I don't see what's going on. It helped me a lot, you know, because I know that it is just, it's very hard.
The best thing is to get out of the house altogether. Then somebody can come in and turn it around again. Anything else?
At times, like, we know that, I mean, we know that we've got to be, like, very respectful when we deal with any person, be a person, be a devotee or non-devotee. And we know also that, you know...
What's the first point?
His first point is that we are meant to be respectful to whether they are devotees
or
not devotees.
Yeah. But at times, when a conversation happens, and things get a little, like, you know,
heated up.
We tend to forget about this thing of respect and find ourselves, like, you know, giving way, like, to anger, or we become agitated.
You gotta train yourself, Prabhu. That's all you have to do. You know. There's a saying, peak performance under peak pressure. When the telling you, it gets really intense, that's when you got to really keep your cool. You got to really keep your cool. That's why quality japa is very important. You have to have that higher taste, so you won't try to... See, in this material world, we try to get enjoyment by lording it over. That's our pleasure. Whatever extent you can lord it over, that's your pleasure in the material life. So that's what causes us to sometimes vent our anger on other people and try to dominate over them, even in so-called Krishna conscious conversation. So we have to get our pleasure from Krishna consciousness, not loading it at all. From the holy names, from preaching, from chanting, from honoring prasadam, all the activities, from serving the Vaishnavas, from the real thing is you have to worship all the Vaishnavas. Every devotee should be an object of worship. Every devotee should be worshipable. That's Narottam Das Thakur's instruction. So how you can show contempt towards your object of worship? You have to actually worship every devotee, the representative of Krishna. Train yourself in this way. Not just when you're dealing with it, but your thoughts, when you think about. Just like I have some devotees who mistreated me very badly. And sometimes I think about them. So what do I think? I think, oh, that rascal. No. I think, here's one trick I found that I use. I think, what does Prabhupada feel about this person? What is his attitude? Prabhupada sees all the wonderful service they have done, you see, the great service and sacrifice they have made for him. If you will always think about any person you have a hard time getting along with, try to think, how would Prabhupada see this person? What would Prabhupada's vision of this person be? If you see and think in that way, you will find something wonderful about that person that's a very admirable. You understand? In that way, you can keep yourself from trying to lord it over that person and think of how to serve him. Does that make sense to you? So it's 9:30. I think it's a good time to cut off. It's been a wonderful evening with all of you here. So all of you kindly now become perfect grihasthas, except for you. Any other brahmacharis here? Now you become a perfect trainer of the guru. You become a guru for all the grihasthas, teaching them, taking this knowledge and making sure that they're good grihasthas by keeping Krishna the center.
One last question.
Yeah. All right, I'll give you. Since you're the one brahmachari, I'll give you the question.
Sometimes, especially the elderly grihasthas, they have grown-up children. At home, they actually teaching the child, but sometimes when they go to school, higher education. And they also get the association from the outside, students, people. So then it becomes very difficult for the parent to
control.
It's too late then. By the time they go to university, it's too late. You have your chance when they're small children. By the time they're teenagers, it's pretty well over. The chance you had to influence them is pretty well gone now.
That's right.
You got to get him when they're young and train them right. Otherwise, there's nothing you can do.
That's right. Not just force them to do things or practice what they are doing, but you have to make them understand why they are doing it. You have to have the knowledge.
That's right.
That's why hearing is very important for the children.
They have to know the philosophy. As little children, they should be expert in the philosophy. Just like this boy here, he's hearing very nicely. If he continues to hear nicely like this, he'll become an expert philosopher even as a small child. He can give eloquent lectures on philosophy even as a small boy.
They need to learn.
Give the children this credit that they can become highly advanced philosophers even at a very young age. You have to. Otherwise, when they're teenagers, they go to college, they'll be all nonsense. They'll be taking drugs, having illicit sex, getting girls pregnant. All that nonsense will happen. And you'll be wondering, what did I do wrong? Well, I'm telling you what to do right now, so do it. For these small children, you must train them from the very beginning. You make them pure devotees from the very beginning. Well, you have to be a pure devotee. The parents must be pure devotees. Not that you might, you be a pure devotee while I, you know, don't you smoke while I smoke. No, I think I'm not. So you have to train them now. The parents should all become pure devotee, ideal Vaishnavas, and then engage your child in doing what you are doing, practicing pure bhakti. That's the key. If you do that, that your family life is glorious as Bhaktivinoda Thakura's family. He had 12 children, and one of them is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura. So we'll stop here. Bhaktivinoda Thakura ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai.